పంచమా కపిలో నామా సిద్ధేశా కాల విప్లుతం ప్రోవాచ సురయే సాంఖ్యాం తత్వగ్రామావినిర్ణయం పంచమా కపిలో నామా సిద్ధేశా కాల విప్లుతం ప్రోవాచ సురయే సాంఖ్యం తత్వగ్రామావినిర్ణయం పంచమా కపిలో నామా సిద్ధేశా కాల విప్లుతం ప్రోవాచ సురయే సాంఖ్యం తత్వగ్రామావినిర్ణయం పంచమా కపిలో సిద్ధేశ కాల విప్లుతం Panchama, the fifth one, Kapila, Kapila, Nama of the name, Siddhesha, the foremost amongst the perfect, Kala, time, Viplutam, lost, Provacha, said, Asuraye, unto the Brahman named Asuri, Sankhyam, metaphysics, Tattvagrama, the sum total of the creative element, Vinirnayam, exposition, translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The fifth incarnation named Lord Kapila is foremost among perfected beings. He gave an exposition of the creative elements and metaphysics to Asuri Brahmana, for in course of time this knowledge had been lost. Purport. The sum total of the creative elements is 24 in all. Each and every one of them is explicitly explained in the system of Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy is generally called metaphysics by the European scholars. The etymological meaning of Sankhya is that which explains very lucidly by analysis of the material elements. This was done for the first time by Lord Kapila, who is said herein to be the fifth in the line of incarnations. So here we are in this chapter, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. We're getting a little preview of what's going to be coming in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, what's nice about Srimad Bhagavatam is that We just studied 12th canto, and if you remember, Sutta Goswami had given a summary of the whole Bhagavatam. And so now here we're starting with the first canto, and then we're getting a preview of what's going to happen. Expert teacher, a teacher does that. A teacher will always tell you what's about to happen. It will give a summary in the end. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a good teacher, and also in between it will repeat itself. I remember Nagaraj Prabhu was talking about that, how again in second canto there is a whole list of incarnations again, maybe different than what we have here. So this is just one verse, just telling about Lord Kapila, in just one sentence that we'll be hearing about him. So I'm just going to expand a little bit on this verse about Kapila and Mother Devahuti. Actually, the pastimes in the third canto, Kapila's philosophy it covers 8 chapters, from chapter 25 to 33. So I'm not going to speak here in half an hour of those, 8 chapters with high philosophy. But what I thought I would do today was is actually look into Devahuti's questions. What are the kind of questions he asks? And then we'll understand why Kapila says what he says. We heard yesterday, actually, Nagaraj Prabhu was talking about, he quoted some verses from Kapila's instructions. And they were pretty heavy. And so we'll see why he says what he says. Because he's responding to Devahuti, Mother Devahuti. Questions are something I was thinking very, very important thing to hear what kind of questions somebody is asking. You get to know about the person when they're asking questions. Even like sitting here in the Bhagavatam class every day, we have few devotees who kind of regularly ask questions, and like Tirukram Prabhu and others. And we get to know them. We get to know something about them. If you already know something about devotees who ask questions, we get to know a little bit more about them. Or if we don't know anything about them, we get to know something about them. And that's how we see Mother Devahuti, we will hear. I was thinking how in our CC reading, we have Mother Vishakha. She always asks questions. And it's just such a delight, because those questions, when she asks, brings into a nice discussion. That's what the nature of questions are. Therefore, after class, good questions bring out good discussions. We'll definitely be missing her for our CC reading. So here we will hear about Mother Devahuti's questions that she asked. Now, just to give you a little background, for those who don't know, we know Kardama Muni was married to Devahuti, and Kardama Muni was leaving to take sannyas. And before he was leaving to take sannyas, Mother Devahuti said that, "You're going to leave me?" And she was feeling bereft, and she felt, specifically she asked that, "I've had your association for so long, but I didn't get fearlessness. That is something that I need. You're going to go away and I'm here on my own." She had 9 daughters. And so Kardama Muni said, "Do not worry. Because the Lord had told him before that you will be having a son. The Supreme Personality of the Godhead will come." Actually, Krishna told him that, "I will come as your son." And so Kardama Muni told Devahuti, his wife, that, "Do not worry. You will be in your womb. The Supreme Personality of Godhead will come." And so when Kapilde, who is Kardama Muni and Devahuti's son, when he appeared at that time, described that how Kardama Muni first he offered obeisances to Kapildev, and it describes that he specifically went to in a secluded place and he offered obeisances to him. And he asked his permission to go to the forest and to take sannyas. Now, you may wonder, why did he ask permission? And naturally, he's asking his permission because he's going to be leaving his mother alone. And so, in other words, "I'm going and I need you to take care of your mother." So he didn't say that, but he asked his permission. But from the answer of Kapildev, He says he gives permission to his father to go and take sannyas. But in addition, he says that I will give what I have come here to give the philosophy, Sankhya philosophy, I'll be giving to my mother. So in other words, he assured him that he will be taking care of his mother. So that's the first time you kind of see the, let's say, the affection, the relationship between the mother and the son. So Kardama Muni leaves, and then we start hearing about the relationship or the exchange of Devahuti and Kardama Muni. Now, Kardama Muni, he described that he lived in a hermitage which was surrounded by Saraswati. And it was a very, I mean, in my mind, before I actually read this whole thing, I used to think maybe he was living in a hut or something. I mean, I knew the whole thing. He created a palace and everything for Devahuti and himself to go around and all over the place. But I had the idea about where his living place was, a hermitage. It was very simple, like a grass hut that you would think in Bengal or something like that, you know. But no, it describes that it was a very beautiful place he was living. And it was surrounded by Saraswati River. And also it describes something about Bindu Sarovar. So I'm not too sure where the Bindu Sarovar was located as far as, was it close by? But maybe Saraswati was far away, but it was surrounded by that. But it describes that it was a very beautiful hermitage. The beautiful gardens, the flowers, the beautiful flowers, and birds would come on the sit on the tree, and bees would be there. So you can imagine the beautiful scenery that they were living in. So this is a situation that Kapila Dev was living with his mother in a very beautiful place. Although Kapila Dev was a brahmachari, but to please his mother, he was there with her. And then we hear, describes that when Kapila, who could show her the ultimate goal of the absolute truth, was sitting leisurely before her. That word caught my attention, was sitting leisurely before her. Devahuti remembered the words Brahma had spoken to her, and she therefore began to question Kapila as follows. So Devahuti was a very conscious person. She knew that her son was God. And so while he was sitting, he was not like active doing things here, there, no. She had some important questions. And so she wanted to ask when she saw her son was peaceful, ready to speak to her. So that's the word leisurely kind of struck me, that how she was very conscious. And then she remembered the words that Brahma had spoken to her. Brahma came to Kardama Muni and Devahuti when Kapila Dev was in Devahuti's womb, and he had offered prayers. And at that time, Brahma had said that in your womb, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there. So she remembered that. And so therefore, she asked her son some questions. So remember, we are going to really focus on Devahuti's questions. So please hear her questions and see who this person is. Who is Mother Devahuti? Although we know quite a lot about Mother Devahuti from the previous chapters, that how she served her husband. Two words are used there of how she served her husband. It describes Vishrambhena and Gauravena, with great respect and with intimacy. So that is how Devahuti served her husband. So now we get to know something more about her. This is what she said to her son. I am very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of this sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. So Prabhupada writes, I'm very sick. Kind of like we say, I'm sick and tired of something. So basically she's using that. She's saying, I'm sick and tired of my material senses. The word in Sanskrit used nirvinna, which means Prabhupada himself translate as disgusted. So she's disgusted because of her material senses. Why? She says, because of this sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into an ignorance. She continues and says, due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your Maya and have identified myself with the body and consequent bodily relations. So she's feeling, it almost seems like she's feeling the absence of her husband, because who is her bodily relations? It's her husband. And she, her husband just left her. And so she's definitely feeling, naturally she's feeling grief of the fact that he is gone and she doesn't have his association anymore, especially with such a liberated soul. So she's feeling that. So she's asking her son something to do about her identification with her body and consequent the bodily relations. Then she says to Kadamuni, her son, I have taken shelter of your lotus feet because you are the only person of whom to take shelter. You're the axe which can cut the tree of material existence. I therefore offer my obeisances unto you. And she says, I inquire from you as to the relationship between man and woman and between spirit and matter. So again, this kind of gives away something how she's feeling as far as she's talking about man and woman and then also between spirit and matter. So it describes that when Kapildev heard her mother, his mother's question, he thanked her within himself. He didn't thank her outwardly. I don't know why he didn't thank her outwardly, but it specifically says that he thanked her within himself for her questions. And thus, his face smiling, he explained the path of the transcendentalist. So maybe he was very pleased with her, and he smiled, and he didn't thank her outwardly, but maybe because he was taking the position of a guru, I'm not too sure, but this is what it described. So here we see then Kapildev answers Devahuti's questions by basically saying to go above the body conception of I and mine. And he says, every man knows very well that attachment for material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. But, he says, but the same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door of liberation. And he further talks about engaging in chanting and hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's answering Devahuti's question, because she asked how to get out of misery. Remember, she said that she's miserable, she's disgusted, these senses are giving her, keeping her in ignorance. So here he's Kapildev is answering her question by saying, engage constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sadhus do not suffer from material miseries because they're always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. So in case any one of you are feeling disgusted or feeling miserable, so here Kapildev is saying what to do. The way to transcend is by always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. That's why we hear the Bhagavatam every day, so that we can be always thinking about Krishna's pastimes and his activities. And then he says, in the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. So the devotion, it seems like, and devotional service does not begin till you're actually hearing all the time the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes and activities. So this is in chapter 25 we've been reading, which is entitled Glories of Devotional Service. Then the next question that Devahuti asks, same chapter actually, on hearing this statement of the Lord, Devahuti inquired, so hear her question, what kind of devotional service is worth developing and practicing to help me easily and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet? So that's kind of my question, my kind of question. how to do something that is easy and fast. So that's what she's saying. How to do devotional service? What kind of devotional service should I do so that's easy and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet? It almost seems like she's very anxious. It shows her anxiousness of wanting to reach the goal of life. And therefore she's asking, I don't have much time. Please tell me how I can do it easily. And then she says, then you see another aspect of her humility. He says, my dear son Kapila, after all, I'm a woman. It is very difficult for me to understand the absolute truth because my intelligence is not very great. But if you will kindly explain it to me, even though I'm not very intelligent, I can understand it and thereby feel transcendental happiness. So she is doing two things here. One thing is she's expressing humility and saying, hey, this is where I'm at. I'm a woman, not so intelligent. But that's not a disqualification because, my dear son, my dear Lord, you are merciful. You can explain it to me in such a way that I can understand. So there are two things that we see that her question here or her statement is revealing about her. So at this stage, Maitreya Muni is saying, now Maitreya Muni is actually telling this whole pastime to Vidura. We've heard it over and over and over again about how there is one conversation between another conversation between another conversation. So this conversation is being told by Maitreya Muni to Vidura. And so Maitreya said, after hearing the statement of his mother, Kapila could understand her purpose and he became compassionate towards her because of being born of her body. He described the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is a combination of devotional service and mystic realization. So Sankhya philosophy, I never knew that till I was preparing for this class, is actually a combination of devotional service and mystic realization. The Sanskrit term that is being used by Maitreya Muni is bhakti vitana yogam. So bhakti and then yogam. Yogam is used, Prabhupada over and over uses the word here in this chapter, although we see in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada uses the word, the translation for yoga in many different ways, but in this particular chapter, Prabhupada uses the word yoga, he translates as mystic yoga. And so bhakti vitana yogam, bhakti and then mystic yoga, and vitana means to spread. And so Prabhupada translates that, which is a combination of devotional service and mystic realization. It's funny, like mystic, in my mind, I always thought mystic like growing up as a devotee as something negative, because we not care for mystic potencies but here, Prabhupada uses the word mystic yoga in a very positive way, very positive way. We see again and again that Prabhupada uses the word mystic yoga. So then he starts talking about describing her answer to that. Again, talking about devotional service, but one of the things that he gets into is in the next chapter, fundamental principles of material nature. And he again, Devahuti asks, kindly explain the characteristic of the Supreme Person and his energies. And that's where he describes all of 24 elements that Prabhupada mentions in the purport. It's very elaborate, but he describes that there are 24 elements, you know, the five gross elements and then five subtle elements, four internal senses, five senses of gathering knowledge, and five outward organs of action. And I'm not going to go into philosophy, but there's a whole description about that. I can give a seminar, come to my house, and I'll tell you everything about it. Anyway, so then the next chapter is understanding material nature. And there Devuti asks her son, my dear Brahman, and this is a very, very deep question she's asking here. You can see her intelligence. She's so intelligent. She's so tuned. When she hears Karma Muni's, Kapiladev's responses. So she says, my dear Brahman, does material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? Since one is attracted to the other eternally, How is their separation possible? So she's thinking how, she's thinking for herself, she's thinking probably for everybody else. How can ever, how could material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? Because they're so tied together. As there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness. Hence, even though he is the passive performer of all activities, that is the soul, how can there be freedom for the soul as long as material nature acts on him and binds him? Even if the great fear of bondage is avoided by mental speculation and inquiry into the fundamental principles, it may still appear again, since its cause has not ceased. So she's asking, how could that ever be? How can the soul be ever be released from material nature? So all of you are great scholars. Anybody would like to tell me what could be the possibility, how that could happen when here Devahuti is saying that, can it ever happen? How, yes, Madan Mohan Prabhu. After Madan Mohan Prabhu tells me, I will read what Kapil Dev says here.
Well, it's basically an impersonalistic question, and it's by devotional service. That's the short answer.
Thank you. Devotees always know the answer. That's right. Prabhupada has given us everything. So we have heard it many times. And here what Kapil Dev says. One can get liberation by seriously, again, certain words stick out to me, by seriously discharging devotional service onto me and thereby hearing for it long time. Another word, long time, about me or from me. By thus executing one's prescribed duties, there will be no reaction and one will be freed from the contamination of matter. And I was thinking, this is what it means, the mystic. It's actually mystical. How is that when the spirit soul and material nature are so tied together, how could it be that we can just hear and chant about Krishna and you can be released? It's mystical. It's very mystical. Something about it, very mystical. And here, the words again, words always catch my attention. The word here is used, tivraya. That word comes, when I saw that word, that comes in the second canto, you know, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udare, tivrena, tivrena. The word tivra means really fast. You know, you're like running a race and you want to get there first. You're so focused. It's so intense that you don't think about anything else, but you want to just attain your goal. And it's interesting in that verse, akama, sarvakama, moksha kama. So he's saying that no matter what your motive is, whether your motive is akama, you have no desires, sarvakama, if you have all desires, whatever you want the biggest this, you want the new gadget, you want the, who knows, whatever, you want grandchildren, you want the, whatever you desire, you may have all desires. Akama, sarvakama, moksha kama, if you want liberation, whatever it is, perform devotional service with focused attention and with speed. And we just heard long time. So here Kapil Dev is telling us that we need to be very, very, very serious. He's telling us, he's telling Mother Devahuti, to perform your devotional service. And that's something he describes that, yeah. But one thing is, earlier, before he says that, in text number 2, Kapil Dev says, when the soul is under the spell of material nature and false ego, identifying his body as the self, he becomes absorbed in material activities. And by the influence of false ego, he thinks he is the proprietor of everything. So I'm sure none of us become absorbed in material activities. But he says that, this is by the influence of false ego, he thinks he's the proprietor of everything. And then he says, unless he's relieved of material activities, He has to accept this position because of his faulty work. So unless we stop our material activities, we have to continue this birth and death, cycle of birth and death. However, later on he says, listen to this, he says later on, the influence of material nature cannot harm an enlightened soul even though he engages in material activities. So basically, even though we are engaged in material activities, if we are continuously hearing about Krishna, if our thoughts are absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, his activities, his words, then we can be free from ignorance and go back to Godhead. So this is chapter 28. In chapter 29, explanation of devotional service by Lord Kapila. Again, Devahuti asks. So you see, all these questions are being asked by Mother Devahuti, and the answers, why Kapila is speaking, what he's saying, is because Devahuti is asking him these questions. Now she asks, my dear Lord, please describe me in detail. She says, describe in detail. When do we want to hear something in detail? Because we really want to know something really good. We want to know detail about everything. So she says, please describe me in detail, both for me and for people in general, the continual process of birth and death. For by hearing of such calamities, we may become detached from the activities of the material world, of this material world. So she wants to know in detail how to become detached. So those heavy verses that Nagaraj Prabhu was talking about yesterday that he quoted, why did Kapil Dev speak that way? Because Mother Devahuti wanted to cut the attachment. She wanted to hear every detail about it so that she could go beyond misery. And so sometimes, like she said, you're the axe that can cut my ego. So she's asking him to do that. And so this is what, so I'm going to read you some verses. So hold on to your seat. They're verses that are pretty intense. And I'm just going to read them. And they're not for us because we're trying to become a devotee. But maybe we have, since we haven't, at least I haven't become on a pure level, so some of this applies to me. And some of them you might find that apply to you. But really, because we're in the process of devotional life, Krishna helps us to go beyond that. But still, it's good. Devahuti, who is a devotee, who's nothing but a pure devotee, she says she's asking for herself and for everybody else. So she's asking for us too. And so Kapila, this is what he says. Where should I start? There's so much here. I'll start from text number 7. Although he, that is the living entity, is always burning with anxiety, such a fool always performs all kinds of mischievous activities with a hope which is never to be fulfilled in order to maintain his so-called family and society. He gives heart, and remember, he's saying because Devahuti is asking. She has elicited these answers from her son, Kapil Dev. He gives heart and senses to a woman who falsely charms him with Maya. He enjoys solitary embraces and talking with her, and he's enchanted by sweet words of the small children. The attached householder, the important word here is attached. So if we are attached, the attached householder remains in his family life, which is full of diplomacy and politics, always spreading miseries, and controlled by acts of sense gratification, he acts just to counteract the reactions of all his miseries. And if he can successfully counteract such miseries, he thinks that he's happy. He secures money by committing violence here and there, and although he employs it in the service of his family, he himself eats only a little portion of the food thus purchased, and he goes to hell for those for whom he earned the money in such an irregular way. When he suffers reverses in his occupation, he tries again and again to improve himself. But when he's baffled in all attempts and is ruined, he accepts money from others because of excessive greed. Thus, the unfortunate person, unsuccessful in maintaining his family members, is bereft of all beauty. He always thinks of his failure, grieving very deeply. So these are just some of the verses. The whole chapter goes on, and it's pretty intense to read it. The only solace is then when you read something like that, you feel like, well, we have Srila Prabhupada's mercy, and he has shown us the path, and we are going towards it. But hearing such, it is important. This is part of the Bhagavatam. It's not non-devotees are hearing the Bhagavatam. It's devotees who are hearing the Bhagavatam. So even these kind of statements can remind us what this material world is about. So basically, after Karda Muni, after Kapildev speaks to her, then Devahuti, in the end, she thanks Kapildev for giving her the knowledge by instructing her. And then once she instructs, she thanks and offers obeisances, then Kapildev describes that he responds to his mother in a very beautiful way. He says, if I can find it. Actually, I mean, maybe I don't have it here, but anyways, Kapiladeva was very grave, and after instructing his mother, he took her permission. I specifically, that caught my attention again, that he took her permission, and then he left home. And describes that Mother Devahuti, after being instructed, she began to practice bhakti yoga in the same ashram that she was living, in that beautiful ashram. And she practiced samadhi in the house of Karda Muni, which was so, again, beautifully decorated with flowers that it was considered the flower crown of the river Saraswati. And then it describes in the end that she had attained perfection. The place where Devahuti achieved her perfection, my dear Vidura, that's Maitreya speaking, is understood to be a most sacred spot. It is known all over the three worlds as Siddhapada. Then he says, dear Vidura, the material elements of her body have melted into water. Wow, I never knew that. He said, the material elements of her body have melted into water and are now a flowing river, which is the most sacred of all rivers. Anyone who bathes in that river also attains perfection, and therefore all persons who desire perfection go bathe there. In the end, described in that chapter 33, that actually Kapiladev, he just like I think Nagashpur was mentioning Narayan Rishi there still in Badrikasha, describes that Kapiladev is also up north. It doesn't say Badrik Ashram, but it gives northeast. So I'm assuming it's in the same place. So Kapildev apparently is still there. And so I guess with all the other sages that are there, they're having a good sangha there up in the northeast in the Himalayas somewhere. So that's what he described about Kapildev. Couple of things that just mentioning about Kapildev. He is mentioned, I couldn't figure out what kind of avatar he is. It describes as Kala, which Prabhupada describes as him as Kala, which is Ansha of the Ansha. So he is the part of the portion of the portion, part of the part. But then we also hear that he is one of the 12 Mahajans. His name comes in one of the 12 Mahajans. So he's a Mahajan, he's an incarnation, he's described as a devotee, as Siddha Purusha, one who has perfected beings. I think in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes him as one sage who has attained perfection. So, not too sure, is he a Shakti Avesha avatar or is he a Leela avatar? Maybe Pangavina Prabhu can tell us what kind of avatar he is, but I wasn't able to establish that, except that he was a Kala, an Amsha of an Amsha. So these are some things about Kapildev Devahuti and her son Kapiladev. So if you have any questions at this stage, you may ask or comments, reflections. Yes, Thirukam Prabhu?
Just to add to what Madan Mohan Prabhu was saying about devotional service. So devotional service cuts all good and bad karma also. It purifies the consciousness and allows one to develop love for the Supreme, which is actually a prerequisite to enter the spiritual world.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Dharmaraj Prabhu.
I was just thinking out loud that in the Bhagavatam where you have female taking instructions, there are examples of them taking instructions from their intimate ones, like Devahuti, her son Kapiladev. Then you have Queen Kunti from her dear Lord Krishna, which is her intimate relative. You also have at the end of the Bhagavatam, which is not stated in the Bhagavatam, but Mother Uttara taking instruction from her son Maharaj Parikshit. And yet again, the same concept. Well, Devahuti was saying, please, you know, because of my birth and whatever my intelligence isn't so strong, please give me an essence. So Uttara is saying the same thing, give me an essence. And I was also thinking of the relationship with Mother Devahuti, Kapiladev, Lord Kapiladev, and Kardama Muni. So they are parents of the Lord. At the same time, Kardama Muni is like the spiritual master of Devahuti. And he instructed his son, the Lord, to give her instructions. Mm-hmm. So like that's like his instruction to how to give her, you know, sublime knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's like a intertwine of relationship, and generally we take devotees instruction from the spiritual master and not the Lord himself. That's what we train, but then here the spiritual master is directing the Lord to instruct his disciples. So
thank you, that's very, very, very nice. Kind of like makes me think that yes, even as you're talking about family relations, so yes, even within it, in our own, as we have, if we have devotee families, so that's important. It shows how to have those relationships where you can take instruction from each other and actually progress in our spiritual life. So, thank you. Any other questions, reflections, comments? Questions? Yes, Prabhu?
I was just wondering if you could tell us anything about how Prabhupada mentions there's a different Kapila that espouses an atheistic philosophy.
Okay, thank you. Actually, Srila Prabhupada makes that comment quite often about this imposter Kapila. He said that in some people, a lot of people in India, take the atheistic Kapila as the Kapila, his instructions. And he says that's different than, he says that many times, that how this is different Kapila than the atheistic Kapila. I think the atheistic Kapila, he propounds that the theory Sankhya philosophy, giving all that's given, probably Kapildev just describes that in one of the chapter, Fundamental of Material Nature or something like that, where he describes all the 24 elements and everything. So probably I'm assuming that this imposter Kapila must have taken that and showed that he was, because otherwise in that philosophy, in that chapter, the atheistic aspect does not come out. You can easily take something theistic and just make it atheistic. Almost like Buddhist philosophy is like that. You have the philosophy, but you take God out of there. And so people are attracted to that. You know, people are attracted to philosophy without God being there. And so yes, Srila Prabhupada says that this is not what people think. He's an atheistic Kapila, and our Kapila is nothing but devotional service he describes here. It's interesting that how much Kapildev in these 8 chapters, we hear about Kapildev talking about Sankhya philosophy, and almost, because Sankhya means number. So you're talking about the 24 elements. But that's actually not a very large amount of in those 8 chapters. It's not that much. There's about the living entity, how the living entity goes, you know, from in the womb, how it grows. There's a description about that. There's a description about a lot about devotional service, hearing and chanting, and emphasizes on that. So, but yeah, the Sankhya aspect itself is not that much. And as I read, that Sankhya is a combination, Prabhupada describes, in devotional service and mystic yoga. Yes, you have a question?
I was doing that research. I have to write a paper. And in that research, they quoted this other Kapila as someone who was living across, in a book from India, he was living across the Ganga. Do you know anything about that? Mm. And they said their practices were different from the Brahminical practices. So they were saying in this book that therefore, there was a non-Brahminical community that was criticized where this other Kapila lived. Do you know more about that?
No. The only thing I know is what Srila Prabhupada writes in his books about the atheistic Kapila. And I know if it's the same Kapila as that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's interesting. Even this, in this verse that I read today, it described Asuri, Brahmana. It said, he gave an exposition of the creative elements and metaphysics to Asuri Brahmana. And I'm thinking, who is Asuri Brahmana? I never heard of him. So I did search. I don't think I found anywhere in the, maybe I didn't even check in the Veda base, but I just Googled Asuri Brahmana and Kapila. And what I found was interesting, that this Asuri, and it said that the source was the Mahabharata, and Prabhupada Trivikram knows about Mahabharata quite a lot. So it from the Mahabharata describes that how Asuri, Brahmana, he was very learned, and he had a wife whose name was Kapila with a long A. And when I read that, and described that how he learned, or Kapila was his guru, or not his guru, but the disciple. There was another disciple's name, I forget the name. But yeah, the word, his wife's name was Kapila, and I'm like, okay, I don't think so. I want to read any more of this. But it was described, it was from the Mahabharata. So. Do you know anything about this Asuri Brahmana? Who is this? Prangavinda Prabhu? 117.
Prabhupada actually give the list of that one has to be conversant with the 6 philosophy before he sits in the Vaishasana, he or she, whatever you are sitting there. So, and Kapila, that Kapila name is also there, one of the 6.
Yeah.
You can see, and Prabhupada talks about it in the purport, that unless somebody is conversant, one should not even sit in the Vaishasana. So in a sense, that Kapila is not Kapildev. Devahuti's son is the Kapildev in Ganga Sagar Mela. I don't know if you ever went there. There's a Kapilashram.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm talking about. The millions of people goes there every year. And every 12 years is a big festival. That's where the pseudo Kapila's ashram is there.
So maybe that's what Murali Priya is talking about. Oh, Saraswati.
There's difference. But Ganga Sagar Mela, there is a Kapila ashram there. Big, it's huge.
That's the atheistic Kapila.
Yeah, still there. Yeah. Big. Near Diamond Harbor in West Bengal. Mm. That way.
So, and anything you know about Asuri, this Asuri Brahmana?
He's actually a devotee.
Uh-huh. It's not a, I mean, I don't know where you got the other one. Maybe there's another ashram. But it's a devotee who was actually thriving. Because the pseudo Kapila gives the Purush and Prakriti. What is matter, what is spirit, and who is enjoyer, what is enjoyed. So he was sorting out this. Kapildev also gave. The Lord Kapildev also gave.
Yeah, this
he gave
here.
Yeah, he gave more devotional.
Yeah.
Now this in this case actually Mother Devotee those question is not applicable to her.
Yeah.
Just like Barahari Prabhu told me, Prabhupada was watching a play and Prabhupada turned towards his left side and there was a new bhakta just joined yesterday. And he told Prabhupada told him, can you pray for me? And Barahari Prabhu was a little far and he told me, he was surprised. Why Prabhupada asking a new guy just joined yesterday, asking to pray for him? So the idea is that sometimes they feel, because they are so advanced, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur write a song, himself has all these bad things. So Kapildev's mother, Devahuti, she is in a Shuddha Satta platform. It is not possible she can ever think like this. But she was put into this just to have this discussion.
Thank you.
Because that's why Kapildev smiled three times. Even Sanatana Goswami Pad said three questions was struck to Kapildev when devotee asked. He smiled, but was not a laughing. How do you say that? Because she asked the question, can you tell me how to go beyond the three modes? She's not beyond the three modes, how he would come out from her body. So this is not applicable.
Yeah.
If you look at those question and answer, it's like, wow. So Kapildev smiled three times.
Again, that describes her humility.
Yes.
And not that she's pretending to ask that question.
No,
she's feeling that. Yeah. But because she is on the highest platform, she is feeling that. And that's, yeah.
Well, that's what the Sanatana Goswami Pad said, that when somebody actually crosses, he goes out, he or she goes outside the darkness, actually have a fear of darkness that time. Mm. When somebody is above, beyond the three modes, transcend, then there is a real fear of material world comes.
Mm. Okay. Yes, Sivakam Prabhu.
I was thinking also, you were talking about the four elements, but I thought there was like seven elements. Five senses, five working senses, five object of senses, that's 15. The eight elements, 23.
I'll tell you right
then
now.
Then ego, mind, intelligence, soul, super soul, like that. That's hitting like 27.
I don't remember myself, but I have it written down here, and I'll tell you, and then we can... Okay. The aggregate elements, namely five gross elements, five subtle elements, four internal senses, five senses of gathering knowledge, and five outward organs of action are known as pradhan. So that makes it 24. But different places, sometimes there are different lists is given, but here this is what Kapildev gives. And then we shall end the class now, but here you can see in the chapter 26, and it gives all the details of what those five, all the description, earth, water, fire, ether.
26.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much for your kind attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.